Iranians hold a rally in support of Palestinians and against Israel as people in the occupied West Bank lay to rest a resistance fighter killed in an Israeli raid. Nasrallah says Israel cannot even dream of plundering Lebanon's resources because Hezbollah will never let that happen. Also on this news broadcast, Iranian satellite Hayam aboard a Russian Soyuz rocket blasts off from Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Now, beginning with our top story this hour, Iranians have staged a protest rally in the capital, Tehran, denouncing Israel's three-day aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip. The protesters gathered at Palestine Square to show solidarity with Palestinian people. They held placards chanting anti-Israel slogans. Last Friday, Israel carried out an airstrike in an apartment building in Gaza in an attempt to kill a leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement. While the resistance group retaliated with a barrage of rockets fired at different parts of the occupied territories. An Egypt brokered truce ended the fighting on Sunday. The three-day Israeli onslaught left 46 people in Gaza, including 16 children dead and some 360 others injured. Palestinians are mourning the death of Ibrahim al-Nabulsi, an Islamic Jihad fighter who was killed during an Israeli raid on his house in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Now, Palestinians are saying that his death will not cause the resistance to back down.
No, they didn't win. They didn't win. There are hundreds of Ibrahims. There are a million of Ibrahims. There are millions of Ibrahims. There isn't just one Ibrahim in the world. No, any Palestinian himself is Ibrahim.
Al-Nabulsi, commander of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, was killed after regime forces fired a rocket at his house. The raid also triggered an exchange of fire between Israeli soldiers and Palestinians, and that left two more Palestinians dead and scores of others injured, including a woman. Meantime, Hamas resistance movement says that Palestinians are united in their fight against Israel until they bring an end to the occupation. The Israeli military has been conducting deadly raids almost on a daily basis in the occupied lands, while the forces often resort to live fire against Palestinians protesting against Israeli atrocities. Mona Kendall joined us a short while ago and provided us with some details on the latest Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus.
The Israeli military revealed that the main aim of the operation was to kill Ibrahim al-Nabulsi, who evaded numerous assassinations in the past, and a number of his friends were killed by the Israeli soldiers in Nablus. But this time, the Israeli forces unfortunately succeeded to kill this Palestinian fighter who was seen by many Palestinians as a hero. His friend also, his friend was also killed during this operation, Islam Sbouh, 25 years old, and there is another Palestinian, a third Palestinian actually, a teenager, 16-year-old, Hussein Jamal Taha, was shot dead during this operation. As you have mentioned, we are speaking also about over 40 Palestinians were wounded during this operation. The aim of the Israeli military was to kill Palestinian fighters. It was the same aim of the Israeli military operation in the Gaza Strip, to kill Palestinian leaders of the Jihad movement.
Saad Nimr is a political science professor at the Birzeit University, and he says that Israel has intensified attacks against Palestinians out of desperation and in the face of growing strength of the resistance front.
That Israeli, they noticed in the last few months that there was a growth of the Palestinian resistance in the cities such as in Jenin and in Nablus, and maybe that will be copied also to other cities. And that was very much alarming for the Israelis. Part of the operation was in the war on Gaza against Islamic Jihad, because the focus on Jenin refugee camp usually and the arrest of Bassam Saad Saadi because of the Islamic Jihad Brigade, which are in Jenin. Now, this is alarming for the Israelis, and they want to eliminate the Palestinian armed resistance that exists in Jenin and in Nablus, because they are afraid, really, that will be copied in all other cities, and in such case, the Israeli will have a problem in arresting and wandering around, and that will give a growth to the Palestinian armed resistance, which we started to witness in the last few months in more and more operations against the Israelis and resistance when they come to the refugee camp or to Nablus. Recently in Nablus, there was many clashes, armed clashes with the Israeli when they arrived at the city of Nablus in many occasions. So now it is about time, from their point of view, to eliminate the Palestinians.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says the group will not allow Israel to even dream of plundering the nation's resources. Citizen Nasrallah warned the regime against miscalculating Lebanon's resolve, and that amid a maritime dispute over Israel's attempt to take control of the Karish gas field in the Mediterranean. Nasrallah was addressing hundreds of mourners commemorating Ashura. The Hezbollah chief also said resistance is the only way to the liberation of the Israeli-occupied territories, reaffirming support for the Palestinian cause. He also slammed as shameful the move by some Arab states to normalize ties with Israel. Nasrallah said that Bahrain is a case in point for oppressing its own Muslim population while welcoming Israeli officials. Millions of Muslims in several countries are marking Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Iraqis converged on Imam Hussein's shrine in the city of Karbala to show their grief and perform mourning rituals. People also gathered in mourning processions in the capital, Baghdad. Mourners also rallied in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, to commemorate the sacrifices of Imam Hussein and his companions. The occasion also was marked in different cities in Canada. The martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein was marked in Iran on Monday. Ashura is the 10th day of the lunar calendar month of Muharram. It's a day when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred on the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq in 680 AD. Aguin mentioned Canada and the Western world. Also, Muslims in London have commemorated the modern anniversary of the third Shia Imam. Said Purza has a report from the British capital.
Throngs of Londoners marching through the center of the British capital to commemorate Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, brutally murdered in the Battle of Karbala 1,400 years ago. Similar processions in the rest of the UK and the world to mourn him and his 72 companions killed along with him, among them members of his family. Their crime, standing up to the tyrant of the time, the Caliph Yazid.
It was a tragic incident that happened many years ago, but the moral stand that Imam Hussein took has transcended time and space. Its reverberations felt through generations, and this is proof of it.
Many generations later, men, women, and children flagellate themselves to identify with the suffering of the Prophet's grandson, a man of morals who strived for social justice. And it's not just the mourning that unites the people here. For them, the march is an annual chance to share the legacy of Imam Hussein beyond the borders of their countries of origin. Saeed Purza, London.
Now, Karim Sharara, an Islamic scholar from Guam, elaborates on Imam Hussein's message of resistance against injustice and tyranny.
The Battle of Ashura basically lifted religion up from very dire straits again. So when you see the oppression that exists all around the world, our main takeaway from this, from everything that's happened over the past 1,400 years, is that by reviving or by remembering what happened to Imam Hussein and his companions, and by consoling ourselves with the fact that even in the most dire of circumstances, he was able eventually to become victorious through the message that he wanted to spread, we find some sort of solace in our oppression. And in rising up against this oppression, against, I mean, when we rise up for justice, for social justice, when we're brought down, I mean, repeatedly, again and again. Look at the resistance in Lebanon, for example. The resistance in Lebanon back in 1982, despite the oppression, despite everything we were up against, we were able, through the grace of God, to lift this oppression up, and then we had the liberation of the year 2000. Again, 2000, 2006, 2011, 2012, 13, 14, 16, 18, and up till now, every year, every time we've been able to, we stood against oppression, we stood on the side of justice, we put our faith in God and managed to go forward, God eventually granted us victory. This is how we view the uprising of Imam Hussein.
Now, in Nigeria, security forces have attacked Shia Muslims during an annual Ashura procession in the northern city of Zaria, killing several people and injuring many more. Now, locals say that 8 people were killed and many more, including children and elderly, were injured. A spokesman for the Islamic movement in Nigeria has confirmed 4 deaths, saying that security forces attacked the peaceful procession on Monday. Zaria is known for its Shia population and the hometown of senior cleric Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zakzaki. The army has tried to dismantle the Islamic movement headed by Zakzaki using brutal force on many occasions. During crackdown in 2015, the military attacked the movement's members as they were holding religious processions, killing hundreds of them, including 3 of Zakzaki's sons. An Iranian satellite is launched into orbit by a Russian Soyuz rocket from the Baikonur space station in Kazakhstan. The satellite, called Hayam, is a remote sensing apparatus that will take high-quality pictures for use in environmental and agricultural research, as well as the monitoring of water resources. Iran's Minister of Communications and Information Technology says the launch is the beginning of a strategic collaboration between Tehran and Moscow in the field of space. Russia also put an Iranian satellite into space back in 2005. Tehran saying that a final agreement in the talks to restore the 2015 nuclear deal must guarantee the rights of Iran as well as the enduring and effective removal of sanctions. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the announcement in a phone call with EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell, and that after the latest round of talks in Vienna. The top diplomat said that Tehran has relayed its views and considerations about EU's proposals to resolve outstanding issues. Amir Abdullahian pointed to Iran's constructive initiatives in the talks and underscored the seriousness and determination to achieve a deal. He urged the other sides, the U.S. in particular, to adopt a realistic approach and refrain from unconstructive stances to pave the way for an agreement. Borrell also assessed the recent Vienna talks as positive. He said relative progress was also made. Russia's envoy to the talks said that the participants now need to decide if the text submitted by the EU is acceptable.
The EU coordinator circulated the final text of the draft decision on restoration of the JCPOA. The participants in the Vienna talks now need to decide if the draft is acceptable for them. In case of no objection, the nuclear deal will be restored.
The U.S. also says it's ready to quickly conclude a deal based on the EU's proposal. Iran says it's too soon to talk about a final text and nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. The nuclear deal known as the JCPOA was derailed after the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Indirect talks have been ongoing in Vienna since April last year for the readmission of the United States to the deal and its restoration. Our correspondent in Vienna, Robert Carter, has interviewed Mohamed Marandi. He's an advisor to Iran's negotiating team. He talked about the talks held in the Austrian capital aimed at reviving the 2015 deal. Marandi told us more about a text proposed by the European Union and is currently being assessed by different sides.
As you know, we've been negotiating with the P4+1 and indirectly with Americans for a few months now. And we've spent a lot of time in Vienna. A lot of the issues were resolved both during the previous talks in Vienna and also during the period in between. our trip to Vienna now and before. During this trip, a number of remaining issues, or the remaining issues, were discussed. Progress was made. And there is a text that exists. All the different sides have to make their comments on the text. And we have to wait and see what the opinions are of the different sides. The Iranians will analyze the text very carefully. We have a very bad experience with the United States and the Europeans. The Americans under Obama violated the deal. Under Trump, they tore up the deal. And under Biden, they continued with Trump's policies. And the EU followed the Americans, regardless of whether they were happy about events or not. So for us, it's a very carefully constructed text that needs to be accepted by all sides, so that the Americans don't have the opportunity to use any loopholes to harm ordinary Iranians again.
Russia says its forces have destroyed yet another cache of U.S. supplied weapons in a missile strike on the central Ukrainian city of Oman.
High precision long range sea based weapons hit a large ammunition depot near the city of Oman in the Cherkasy region. Over 300 rockets for HIMARS multiple launch rocket systems have been destroyed, as well as a large amount of ammunition for American M777 Howitzer.
A defense ministry spokesman says the strike hit an ammunition depot storing long range rockets and howitzers, and that a day after Russian military reporter shooting down 19 HIMARS rockets across eastern and southern Ukrainian regions. The revelation followed an announcement by the Pentagon that it's set to deliver additional weapons to Ukraine, including high-precision HIMARS systems worth $1 billion. Kyiv recently claimed that advanced U.S. weapons could possibly prove game-changer, but Moscow has time and again accused the West, the U.S. in particular, of fueling the flame of war by arming Ukraine.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Allah, Allah. که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
October 22nd, 1969. We maintain the event of Karbala. Our preachers kept the event of Karbala alive. They kept alive the issue of the resistance of a small group, but with immense faith vis-à-vis the powerful but arrogant regime. Shedding tears for martyrs is tantamount to keeping the movement alive. It has been narrated that he who shed tears or makes others weep or even will be rewarded by admission to the paradise. This is because even he who simulates mourning and lamentation for the event of Karbala is helping to preserve the movement and uprising that was initiated by Imam al-Hussein.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the Muharram and Ashura. In one of his speeches, he mentions that with the month of Muharram, the season of epic action, bravery and self-sacrifice begins. It is the month in which blood overwhelms the sword, the power of truth forever condemned falsehood and stamped the oppressor's foreheads and evil government's face with the brand of falsehood. It is the month that taught future generations throughout history how to triumph over bayonet point, a month that recorded the defeat of the superpowers vis-a-vis the word of justice and truth. The month in which the Imam of the Muslims taught us the way to fight the tyrants of history. In this part of his speech, he has summarized the whole battle of Karbala in these sentences. The result of the battle, the movement that Imam Hussein had, he has summarized everything in it. And he said that for the generations, this is Imam Hussein who taught us how to fight against them. And Imam Hussein has become a mark, a slogan that tells us that whoever is with Hussein alayhi salam, he is with the truth. He is with the justice. And if you want to stand against the oppressors, what is the way of standing against them? How to raise your voice against them? And not to stop speaking or raising your voice against the oppression in the world.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi. Sallallahu alayhi.
Wherever there is an oppression, you must stand against that oppression. This is what Imam Hussein has taught us. Imam Hussein has taught us, the month of Muharram teaches us, that how to raise against all kinds of oppressions, how to live with the justice, and how to battle with the superpowers. If you want to have the victory, it is necessary to follow the footsteps of Imam Hussein, to follow the footsteps of Imam Hussein, the guidance that were given by Imam Hussein, the criteria and the criteria which has been given by Imam Hussein, that is the actual thing. And this is the month of Muharram, because when the month of Muharram comes, people, they do protest on their votes against the oppressions.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In the limelight.
Gun supporters and expedient politicians who take firearms industry and other military-industrial complex big donor money while expressing heartfelt prayers are disingenuous, disgusting, and deserving of maximum shame, says F. Douglas Stephenson, researcher, in an article published under the heading Gunmaker profits soar as bloody massacres proliferate in the U.S. Stay tuned for more. U.S. citizens are waking up to the fact that so many politicians can be so easily bought by the weapons industry, an industry that doesn't care how many people must die to protect their huge profits. SafeHome.org reports that after a record year in 2020, gun sales in the U.S. dipped slightly in 2021. Still, with nearly 19 million guns sold, 2021 was the second highest year for gun sales in the U.S., behind only 2020, when estimated gun sales topped 21 million. The previous record year was 2016, with about 16 million guns sold. Total estimated gun sales fell 13% between 2020 and 2021, but they remained higher than they were in 2019, up nearly 40%. The large number of weapons in the United States of America is not only highly profitable for the weapons industry, but also further supports the myth that guns are necessary to maintain the image of rugged individualism. The total number of guns sold in 2021 is more than double the number sold in 2001. In fact, sales in the U.S. rose by about 155% between 2002 and 2021. No state had more gun sales in 2021 than Texas, where an estimated 1.6 million firearms were sold in the nation's second largest state. Florida followed closely with 1.4 million firearms sold. DearLord.com reported that weapons makers Roger and Winchester both had profit spikes in recent earnings filings. Their latest 2021 quarters topped record sales the companies had experienced even during the height of 2020 gun sales surge. The numbers come after July 2021 came in as the second best July on record for FBI background checks on gun sales. Roger reported its net sales in the first 6 months of 2021 were up over $130 million or 51% over the same time last year. The company did nearly $200 million in firearm sales alone between April and June. That represents a 54% increase over the same period in 2020, even though the onset of the coronavirus pandemic and rioting drove Americans to gun stores at record rates during that time period. Similarly, Winchester reported the first 6 months of 2021 produced a $412 million or 108% increase in sales. The gun and ammo makers' sales increased even further by 110% when looking at the April to June period. Winchester's parent company, Olin Incorporation, saw net income climb from a $120 million loss in the April to June period of 2020 to a $355 million profit in 2021. They went from a $220 million loss in the January to June 2020 period to a $599 million profit in 2021. In spite of the above numbers, many citizens are also realizing that the idea of the Second Amendment guaranteeing the right of individual gun ownership is radical and wrong, and was never intended by the founders to be a barrier to establishing a stringent weapon safety and control laws for the U.S. community. Turning gun violence into a mental health problem is incorrect, dangerous, and irresponsible, as anyone with even minimal knowledge of mental health issues knows. It's of course true people who kill children en masse are crazy, but asserting this reality says nothing. All countries have mentally ill and violent people, but U.S. citizens are increasingly more aware that only the United States of America arms them. Although the U.S. public is demanding real changes for much better safety and weapons regulation, the toxic results of U.S. current lack of adequate weapons control policies continues its deadly pace. The United States of America cannot any longer allow the profiteering military-industrial complex and their beholden politicians to get away with hiding or changing the subject, hoping the public forgets about the problem until the next mass shooting. By using denial over many years to reject and avoid the need for stringent gun control legislation, the GOP and some Democrats have fallen into a miasma of self-induced indifference and dangerous permissiveness toward gun ownership and its deadly consequences. The large number of weapons in the U.S. is not only highly profitable for the weapons industry, but also further supports the myth that guns are necessary to maintain the image of rugged individualism. This is why resistance to legislative proposals to better gun control culture and gun violence itself seem to many gun owners as attacks on their own personality and national identity. The bigger, more powerful the weapon, the more powerful the gun owner feels. Many marginalized and enraged lone wolf murderers, thanks to easy access to assault-style weapons, can misuse Second Amendment gun rights to cleanse the world. 21st century U.S. culture still venerates violence with the U.S. myth of heroic frontier psychology, but at the very high cost of crippling and killing American children. Historian Roxanne Dunbar Oritz, in her book Loaded, A Disarming History of Second Amendment, gives alarming statistics about weapons and gun deaths in the United States of America. There are 310 million firearms in the United States, 114 million handguns, 110 million rifles, and 86 million shotguns. The number of military-style assault weapons in private hands, including AR-15 semi-automatic rifles used in the massacres at Majority Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, and at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, is estimated at 1.5 million. The United States has the highest rate of gun ownership in the world, an average of 90 firearms per 100 people. The total gun deaths in the United States of America average around 37,000 a year, with two-thirds of those deaths being suicides, leaving approximately 12,000 homicides, 1,000 of those at the hands of the police. Mass shootings, ones that leave four or more people wounded or dead, now occur in the United States on average at the pace of one or more per day. Disturbing as that fact is, mass shootings currently account for only 2% of gun killings annually. And the number of gun deaths, 37,000, is roughly equal to deaths by vehicle incidents in the United States per year. The Second Amendment, written by James Madison, adopted in 1791, says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Although generations of activists, gun owners, and jurists have disagreed about how this should be interpreted in a modernizing world, what has been recognized is what the Second Amendment was really to be used for. History professor Roxanne Dunbar Orritz documents in Loaded, a disarming history of the Second Amendment, the purpose of armed militias of the Second Amendment. The kind of militias and gun rights of the Second Amendment had long existed in the 13 British colonies and were expected to continue fulfilling two primary roles in the new United States. Number one, destroying native communities in the armed march to possess the continent. And number two, brutally subjecting the enslaved African population. Dunbar Orritz demonstrates that the violence sanctioned by the Second Amendment was a key factor in transforming America into a militaristic business powerhouse. As the fledgling nation embarked on its relentless westward expansion in the 19th century, the labor of powerful, meanwhile, America's gun culture was growing in tandem with the country's increasingly sophisticated publishing and firearms manufacturing industries. Pulp novels romanticized ex-Confederate soldiers and rifle-wielding frontiersmen. Brand name weapons acquired a special status. In the two decades after the Civil War, Dunbar Orritz writes, the Winchester rifle was fetishized for killing Indians, and the cult revival for outlawry. In the process, gun violence and civilian massacres were not just normalized, but commercially glorified, packaged, promoted, and mass marketed. In 21st century America, fantasy and myth about frontier psychology still continue being played out by Hollywood, video internet games, and other manufactured fantasies that promote weapon sales. Just as communities today rely on professional public health experts in epidemiology to control the incidence, distribution and control of disease in any population, so too for public safety and health, we should rely on experts in weapons control and distribution to advise and design adequate, stringent legislation for community weapons control or regulation. The profile of a gun safety program could include, number one, prior to approving access to any weapon, potential weapon owners should be required to get formal instruction and pass a rigorous background check. Number two, an annual inspection by law enforcement authorities on how ammunition and weapons are stored, plus full inspection of weapons themselves, should be conducted. Number three, banned weapons should be collected by law enforcement as well. And number four, reimbursement, if any, for banned firearms would be the responsibility of the taxpayer and should be considered an investment in public safety. After mass shootings, many have or will use an amateur or banal analysis of the psychology of killers to provide much-needed camouflage for the profiteering military gun industrial complex NRA. Declare that it is a mental health, behavioral health problem, all in the killer's mind, and perhaps we will notice that pathetic U.S. state local non-controlled weapons policy results in amazingly high murder rates, suicides, and frequent mass murders. When deranged people have such remarkably easy access to arsenals of weapons, every so often one of them will go ballistic. We can't eliminate all political, religious extremism, or mental illness, but we can most certainly prevent people from having access to rapid-fire semi-automatic weapons and thousands rounds of ammo. The UK has 1/6 Americans' murder rate. Not because they are psychologically healthier or nicer than the United States of America. The UK and many other countries just don't have or allow the weaponry hardware to be available to do as much damage. Thousands of prayers and thoughts are of little value unless Americans accept the fact that their laws reducing access to weapons need to be greatly strengthened, not loosened. Gun supporters and expedient politicians who take NRA, firearms industry, and other military-industrial complex big donor money while expressing heartfelt prayers, thoughts, and condolences for dead children, grieving parents, and disrupted communities are disingenuous, disgusting, and deserving of maximum shame for their preposterous and irresponsible scapegoating of the mentally ill, while letting politicians, devotees of loose access laws, and the profiteering gun industry itself continue to squirm out of any responsibility.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein alayhi salam. Ziyaratan minni wa niyabatan an walidayya.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves?
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashiya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum.
As you were previously with us, brothers and sisters, we were discussing this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, inni silmun liman salamakum wa harbun liman harabakum ila yawmil qiyamah. I am at peace, Ya Aba Abdullah, with he who is at peace with you, and at war, who is at war with you until the day of resurrection. We have sufficiently discussed the true meaning of enmity and friendship in the way of Almighty Allah. Every human being in the beginning possesses an unsullied and sound innate disposition, which is, in Quranic terms, called fitrah. The Holy Quran says, فَأَقِمْ وَجْهَكَ لِلدِّينِ حَنِيفًا فِطْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَطَرَ النَّاسَ عَلَيْهِ. So set your heart on the religion as a people of pure faith, the origination of Allah according to which He originated mankind. فِطْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَطَرَ النَّاسَ عَلَيْهِ. لَا تَبْدِيلَ لِخَلْقِ اللَّهِ. There is no altering Allah's creation. ذَلِكَ الدِّينُ الْقَيِّمُ وَلَكِنَّ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسِ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. That is the upright religion, but most people do not know. This innate disposition, or fitrah, has different characteristics. One of the main characteristics of the innate disposition is that it naturally seeks benefit and good and keeps away from harm and evil. And I don't think we need any reasons, any proofs to establish this reality. If we naturally experience it in ourselves, then we feel that it is right. But there are some limitations for the mankind, because they cannot decipher all the things that are beneficial and harmful to them. They cannot understand which things are beneficial and which things are harmful for them. Of course, to some extent, they can experience, they can try, and they can understand which things are good and bad for them. But some things are unavailable for them to understand. The prophets, peace be upon them, were sent to enlighten the human beings about many of these things that are beneficial and harmful to the human beings that they couldn't be aware of. These prophets communicated divine laws to the people so they could attain absolute perfection, something for which every innate disposition really tries for reaching. They try to warn the people away from sins, which they are taught by the Almighty Allah, that these sins are responsible for the destruction of human soul and its eternal misery. So here we understand that those people who blindly speculate that intellect is sufficient to knowing everything, they are not right. They are deprived of the knowledge that would enable them to seek their natural perfection. But some really realized that submission to God would gradually facilitate their ultimate perfection. But sin is destroying their human souls and fling it to the lowest pit. And those are the ones who struggle to refrain from sins. Those are the ones who understood this fact.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies, it clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates Him, he understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So, fitratullahi allati fatara an-nasa 'alayha, the origination of Allah, according to which He originated mankind, tells all the human beings that there are some things you would understand by your heart. There are also some things that you are not to understand except by the guidance of the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophets. Not all the believers were able to observe steadfastness on the path of absolute perfection because of not caring about this point. The life of the material world and the evil inviting self blindfolded some of the people, and there is a need of awakening the soul and placing it on the right track for these people. These are the people who were not with the Ahlul Bayt until the day of resurrection. Either they were not starting the path from the Ahlul Bayt, or either they were diverted and they were somehow misled from the path of the Ahlul Bayt and they could not stay with them perpetually. إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ until the day of resurrection. And this is a fundamental reason why Islam has legislated and made obligatory the two principles of tawalli and tabarri. It means you have to express your friendships with the lovers of Allah, and you have to express your hatred and detachment from the enemies of Allah both at the same time. When these two principles are practiced constantly and together, this is what changes the human soul. This is what wakes up the soul of human beings. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكي كل عام لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.